The 1995 Sunstone Symposium presents session number 171, A View from the Bishop's Office, The Miracles and Pains of Serving a Mormon Congregation, with panelists Jim Kimball, J. Frederick Toby Pingree.
My name is James Kimball. I'm the moderator for this panel, and we want to welcome all of you here today. We are still awaiting the arrival of Toby Pingree. I understand that he had a tight schedule and will be ushered in the minute he arrives, but I think we should stay to the schedule as much as possible. What we'd like to do is, in terms of a format, is I'd like to have the members of the panel, including myself, make an opening comment about their background, their professions, when they served as a bishop and where they served as a bishop or a counselor, and feel free to make any general comments that they would like to of that experience. And then we'll begin to address some specific issues that face those people who serve in that capacity. I'd like to begin by having our first panelist, Mr. David Redd, address you.
Thank you. My name is David Redd. I am 44. I am a practicing attorney in Salt Lake City. I have had several different experiences, either in a bishopric or as a bishop. I served in a student ward as a member of a branch presidency. I served for a couple of years in a bishopric in Summit, New Jersey, in the Short Hills ward. I served for a couple of years as a bishop in a bishopric as a counselor in Versailles, France. And I was from 1989 to 1994 the bishop of a ward in Farmington, Utah. And Jim has asked us if we would give you some impressions of what we perceived, or at least I perceived as a bishop primarily. I have two observations, one about the people that were in the ward, and the second is about myself. The first observation I have about the people in the ward is that I suppose I was somewhat naive when I was called to be a bishop at the age of 36 because my own children had not yet fully peaked. And so I wasn't sure some of the things that went on in households as they developed and continued on until one of the spouses or one of the members of the household lost a spouse. So I had quite an eye-opening in several respects. One of my own teenagers was engaged after a couple of years while I was in the bishopric of some really unacceptable behavior, which caused some reflection about myself and about my credibility as a bishop. So I began to experience some measure of sorrow and questioning about joy and rejoicing in my posterity about that time. I also was surprised to discover the depth of frustration and loneliness and sorrow in some of the households. As a result of a variety of things, either stemming from relationships with a spouse, relationships with children, and didn't really realize, and maybe I'm just patting myself on the back, how much the church, both as an organization and people within the church, even without wearing some kind of official hat, such as a bishop or a Relief Society president, can seriously and honestly sustain and support people during times of difficulty. Because up until the time that one of my own teenagers began to act out, I had not really felt the kind of pain and despair that accompanies a major problem in life. And may have needed that. I'm not saying that I did, but may have needed that. By that, I mean my own personal experiences in the household to help me understand exactly the kind of pain that people can feel in their lives that is not of a physical kind, but is more of an emotional, spiritual kind. Also in our ward is a mobile home park, and the mobile home park, at one count, we had approximately 35 widows in the mobile home park, and or people who were widowed during the time that I was a bishop in the mobile home park. and was impressed, and I believe that it is the case, that they were sincerely grateful for the attention that was shown them, and was, as I was able to sit with people and talk to people on what I consider to be a real communication level where people talked about how they honestly felt about things, sensed the true feeling of loneliness that people have if they have lost a spouse or a companion, somebody they've had for as long as 50 years. I had lived, I guess, a fairly sheltered life and hadn't, like I say, experienced that kind of spiritual and emotional torment, and was able to appreciate it and to also make the observation, I think, that it is unfortunate that people wait until they have a calling such as a Relief Society president or a bishop before they feel like they can go sit down and talk to people about how people feel and why they feel that way. So that was sort of my observation as a bishop, that there is really a wonderful opportunity to be what I thought to be a positive influence in people's lives in situations where people, for a variety of reasons, were in various stages of pain. The second thing I learned about myself, I think, reflects on that. I came away from the experience with, I believe, an increased testimony of a couple of things. One of them was of the Spirit. And by that, I can say that I felt at times the decisions I made were not decisions that I would have made sitting at my law office going through a rational analysis of what the problems were, what the suspected or proposed solutions were, bringing to bear my trial with a decision that I really felt at times that the decision that I undertook was external and supernal in the sense that I felt true communication with the Spirit. Secondly, I believe that the priesthood, my own experience, I as a priesthood holder have a long ways to go in really being empathetic with people, trying to understand and care and putting my own primarily income-earning activities aside and trying to be of help to some people. So those are some of my observations about the 5 years that I had. I'm happy to say that I was honorably released. I'm also happy to say that I was grateful that our stake had a 5-year policy instead of a 7-year policy. I have 6 children. The oldest one was 14 at the time I was called to be a bishop and 19 at the time I was released. So there were lots of developments, I think, personally and in our family during that period of time. And it was it is a very large responsibility.
My name is Ned Budikofer, and I was born and raised in Idaho. I grew up on a farm. I came from a family of 10 brothers, or 9 brothers and sisters, rather. Grew up there, went on a mission to Hong Kong, came back and got involved in theater pursuits. I went to Weber State College. Then for my graduate studies, I went to Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. I'm married. My wife Cindy is here in the audience. We have 2 children, Ansel and Norma. Ansel is 10 years old. Norma is 7 years old. I guess the impression that I had about a bishop before I was called to be a bishop, that I wanted nothing to do with it. I figured it was going to be too hard to do. And I spent 45 minutes after receiving the calling telling the stake president that why I shouldn't be bishop. And he summed it all up and said, well, that's exactly why you should be bishop, I guess. So I was bishop for approximately 4.5 years in Manhattan. We currently live in Washington Heights in New York. The ward is Manhattan First Ward. It's an inner-city ward, very colorful. Lots of wonderful surprises and experiences. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't have a clue as to how I was supposed to be the bishop or what was supposed to happen. I had sort of tucked that fear so far down inside me that I had no idea where to begin. But I was able to come into a bishopric that had Well, one person stayed as a counselor, and he basically knew a lot of what to do and helped me, and we helped each other through it, and I got another person called, and we started to function. But I remember many times just before church would start, I would go early, of course, and sort of collect whatever I could collect of my thoughts and things that needed to be done. But I remember as it was about ready for church to begin, how I almost panicked. I didn't want to go out of the office. I didn't want to see those people. And it wasn't just the beginning of being a bishop. It was pretty much all the way through. There were days when I just didn't know if I could go out there and keep it for me. I'm glad that I was able to be a bishop. Although at the time it didn't seem like I would be able to say something like this. It was a struggle for me. But in serving people, you kind of learn how to put your own fears aside. You learn how to be a good listener, and you hope you have some advice for them. And quite frankly, I didn't know at times why things were coming out of my mouth when they were, but nonetheless, I accepted them as me and probably the Spirit. I'm hopeful and pretty sure that that's what it was. We had, as the ward, the makeup of the ward continued to change. In New York, they're always struggling to find the proper boundaries and the proper wards to put together, and that's a continual motion. It's you never know what boundaries you're going to have the next year. But when I left New York, the boundaries were basically the Upper West Side of Manhattan, the bulk of Harlem, and part of Riverdale. So we had quite a variety of people that attended the ward, which gave it its uniqueness, and it was a beautiful experience. It gave me the opportunity to make as my major goal people, no matter what no matter what race, color, their political views, my goal was to make everybody feel that they belonged. And I don't know if I attained that fully. I think that we made great strides in that area, where we have a great diversity in our ward that is continuing to function and work together today. So my goal, I guess, was met, and I feel like that I felt at the time if we could make people comfortable to say things in priesthood quorums or in Relief Society quorums or in any kind of Sunday school, that was what we wanted. That people could say how they felt and not feel like something was going to happen to them for feeling that. So I feel that was what happened to the ward while I was bishop. And of course, the most important thing to me in getting it to work was to get fine people around me. And I had two wonderful counselors for the bulk of my time, Jim Tuller and Patrick Perkins. And through them, I was able to make the ward work. Without them, I don't know where the ward would be today. So am I glad for the experience? Absolutely. I wouldn't change it. If they asked me to be bishop again, would I be hesitant? You're darn right. I would be hesitant. But I would have to say I would probably say yes to that experience again. So I'm glad to be here and be a part of this today. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave and Ned. I appreciate these brethren very much. Because when I was asked to do this, I found it a very difficult thing to find either present or former bishops or counselors who were willing to participate on this panel. I must have gone through 15 or 17 of my closest friends, and that's all the friends I have, actually. And they just simply said, sorry, Jim. And for a number of reasons, I have to be candid with you and tell you that, but these brethren, without hesitation, said yes, and I appreciate that, and I hope you know how much it means to me. I'd hate to be sitting up here by myself. Both of these brethren expressed a sensitivity about this issue, and I want you to know that this was a clear understanding that we had, that I cannot violate any confidentialities, and none will be violated here. And if we discuss problems, it will be in a very, very general way. And if anyone takes umbrage at thinking of themselves as being specifically mentioned because you happen to be in one of our wards, please dismiss that from your mind. My name is James Kimball. I was born in Leverican, Utah, which is part of the Tri-City Industrial Complex of southwestern Utah, which includes Hurricane and Tokerville. And I have come a long, long way. But I found in my life, among my 15 closest friends, that while they went on to greater things, I just went on. And I have to quite frankly admit that when I was called to be both a branch president, as was Dave, in a university student stake, I was baffled that my name ever emerged. I didn't know that they were that desperate in that stake for leadership. I had worked my way around the high council table, but I always thought something would intervene. A war or a depression or famine or pestilence, but it didn't, and I was destined to eventually be called, but it still came as a shock when I was. And being in a student stake, a married student stake, is a very interesting experience, my friends. When you sit on a high council or you sit in the stake presidency, to me that's command and staff headquarters. When you're a bishop, you're out in the trenches, and that's where you see life as it really is, and you see problems. Quite frankly, in a young married student stake, a lot of problems we had were of a nature that related to young people being married and being inept in knowing what to do as a husband and wife, and how to fulfill their role, and how to relate to their husband, and how to relate to their wife. And I spent an awful lot of time trying to counsel people. I fortunately had a very good marriage, and still do today. My wife is here, and I love her, and I want her to know that. And she helped me through this. If it hadn't have been for my wife, I wouldn't have made it through those experiences. Finally, after realizing that it was down to 20 and 25 hours a week counseling these young people, a lot of the problems were of a sexual nature. And so we just had a night at our home and invited all the young sisters in the ward one night and all their husbands the next night. And we talked about sex. And my wife stood by me, and we had them come in and sit down and gave them all a couple of 3x5 cards and it said, ask any question you want to and we'll try to answer them. You don't need to put your name on the card. As a matter of fact, we'd prefer you didn't. And it was a free-for-all, and it went for 3.5 hours. And I can tell you that it was, these sisters came up afterwards, and they said, you're the first person, you and your wife, that's ever talked frankly to us about these things in the church, and we appreciate it. And quite frankly, I was just simply trying to let everyone realize that you all had similar problems and the mutuality of these problems, and that they were not horrendous and that they could be worked out. And if you loved one another, that was the bottom line of it. And I want my wife to know it was hard for her, and but she stood by me, and we took turns. She took one card and I took the next, and I know she gulped hard as she read some of those questions, but I got my hours down, quite frankly. I was then just counseling maybe 11 or 14 hours after that. But we didn't have any divorces in those years that I was a branch president, and we didn't have any serious traumatic marital problems. There were times when I thought it was beyond me. I was like Ned. I was not a professional marriage counselor. I just simply had a good marriage and felt that it had worked miraculously for the two of us. And maybe we were just an example. I don't know what it was, but and when times came to talk about things I wasn't very sure about, those words, Ned, would come out for me too, and I would say, where did that come from? That makes great sense, and I'm not used to doing that. And I felt inspiration, which I hadn't felt for a long time since the mission field. So after that experience in the University Stake, I went back to my home ward, and after a number of years, maybe a decade, I was called to be a counselor in a bishopric there. And it was the Federal Heights ward. The bishop was Dr. James Mayfield, Arab specialist at the University of Utah, and Dr. Wally Briner, an OBGYN, and Jim Kimball. Hell fellow, well met, but of a right hemisphere brain, and there's no place for us much in society anymore. But I will tell you this. I wouldn't have missed that experience. I, too, was hesitant and tried to talk the stake president out of it and made all kinds of suggestions to him of other men more qualified. And I later asked the bishop, why did you come up with my name? And he says, well, I thought I'd pull a joke on the ward. And I'm not sure to this day whether he was serious about that or not. But I did have, Robert Burns said, if we could but see ourselves as others see us. The first 2 weeks in that new bishopric, the bishop left to go to Egypt because he had a responsibility there he had to fulfill. And Wally, who was the former scoutmaster, had to take the scouts on a scout trip to Lake Powell. So it left me in charge. And I was at the office one day. My wife called me and said, Sister Arlene Grover has passed away. Wonderful woman. Roscoe Grover's wife, and I had known her very well and thought the world of her. She'd gone to college with my father at Brigham Young. So I went to her home where the family was assembled, and it was a very interesting experience for me because a member of her family confronted me and said, come on up, Toby. A member of her family confronted me and said, who's going to conduct this funeral? And I said, I will. And she said, you're just the second counselor. I said, yes. And she said, where's the bishop? And I said, he's in Egypt. And she said, where's the first counselor? And I said, he's at Lake Powell. She says, you mean you're all we've got? And I said, yep, that's it. Take it or leave it. And so it was a humbling experience for me to realize how people viewed me in the ward. But I took it and ran with it and had a delightful time. And I guess throughout it all, maybe I was the only one who was amused by it. And my beeper has just gone off. I'll come back to myself in just a minute. Toby, take this while I go.
Well, okay, why I enjoyed being a bishop, what happened. Just a little background. I've been a bishop three times. Once in a ward in Ithaca, New York, where it was sort of part college students as well as the people, converts from the upstate and a lot of migrants from the west. For a year, then I was a bishop in Albuquerque, New Mexico for a year, and that was a ward of sort of low economic status out in the Rio Grande Valley, and then I've been a bishop for 9 years in Northern California in a singles ward, young single adults ward. And those are dramatically different experiences. I guess I'll just, address some of the issues about some of the expectations I had and how the expectations were different than the reality. I don't know what the others have said, so I may be somewhat redundant. But in the area of interviewing and counseling. When I started out as a young bishop in New York, I was under the impression that people were anxious to come and talk to the bishop and try and get their lives straightened out and would do what a bishop asked them to do and direct them. And I found out that's not necessarily true, particularly if they're in there and they don't want to be there. With some of the young people, during both the first time I was bishop in New York and in New Mexico, as I started to find out that they had some problems in their lives. They'd been doing some things involved sexually with members of the opposite sex. Why? And I sort of suggested they should stop, and if they didn't, why, then there might be some church action that was taken. That was the end of my relationship with them. It was over with, done. They didn't come back to see me. They didn't want anything to do with me. And it was, I think I learned from that really you help people who want to be helped. And I spent the last 9 years with the singles ward out there. I've dealt with a lot of people with those kind of issues, but almost always when they wanted to talk to me and they were ready to do something with their life and make some changes. And those who didn't, I didn't think it made a lot of sense to really bother them very much. I expected when I'd become a bishop that there would be a lot of soul searching that would go on, doctrinal soul searching with members of the ward, helping them try and understand what the, understand the doctrines of the kingdom, what was right and wrong, and deal with feminist issues and things like that. And I've probably had in 11 years of bishoping one or two conversations like that. Most people that I've, the wards where I've been bishop, just don't care that much about it. They're happy to be involved with the church programs and the way the church sees things and leave it at that. That doesn't mean that I didn't learn a lot about involving women in the ward. In this singles ward in California, we gradually got to where we had women involved in our bishopric meetings all the time. I would never think of managing a ward now without having women involved in every aspect of it. You kind of have to be creative about titles because you can't give women the priesthood and you have to get a lot of things approved by the high council, but you can create a lot of titles, counselors to the bishop or advisors and this sort of thing and that. And for the past 7 or 8 years, we've always had at least 3 women in a bishopric meeting all the time in every council we've had. And the ward was a much better ward because of it. We had a lot more support, and I've kind of become a pretty strident women's advocate in that regard. And also having women involved in church disciplinary councils. Whenever we had a woman that was involved with a church disciplinary council, why, I always had the Relief Society president or one of these women from the bishopric in as part of it, as an advisor to the bishop, in terms of helping him understand what was going on. And I think that was a great blessing to that process too. When I first became bishop, I expected to get a lot of direction and from the stake, and I'd been on a high council in a stake previous before I was a bishop, where the stake president was. Who later became a general authority, had a very strong influence in all the running of the wards and spent a lot of time with the bishops, meeting them and so on. And I expected that to happen. The 3 stake presidents or 4 stake presidents I was involved with called me and left me alone. That was it. And basically, if I wanted help from them, they were there. They'd talk to me. But basically, I could be a bishop and do what I wanted to. And as the time went on, I could certainly see that was the best way that for a ward to run, as far as I'm concerned, as this bishop. I found that being bishop in the singles ward was far less time consuming than it was in being bishop in a family ward. And I think there are 3 reasons for it. One is that we no longer have finances to worry about in wards, and that was a big change. We spend lots of time raising building funds and budgets and welfare monies that we don't even have to worry about now. But second, I think I learned how to run meetings better. I don't think we needed all the meetings we were having before as a bishopric. And then third, a single adults ward is really a very simple ward to administer, much, much easier. If you got competent people, they run the ward, and bishop just is kind of a figurehead that listens to people's problems and kind of counsels them. But, I guess those are the comments I'd make. I'm sorry, Jim, I'll tell you privately afterwards since you missed a lot of my wisdom.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Toby. Appreciate your gift at extemporaneous speaking. It's really improved over the years. Toby Pingree is one of my favorite people. When I went into the military, I didn't have any money to buy new uniforms, so I bought all of his old uniforms, and they really looked quite well. A little bit tight. A little bit tight through the shoulders, but other than that, the one thing I wanted to say in closing out my comments was something maybe all of us could address on this panel, and that is that there clearly were times when I experienced Somebody else's beeper is going off now. As long as it's not mine, that's all I care about. I clearly experienced being over my head in terms of some of the problems that were brought to me. All that I've said about inspiration, be that as it may, I still didn't know what to tell people sometimes. And I was just wondering if you, brethren, ever had that experience, and what did you do? Did you call on the social services of the church? Did you pray for inspiration, or did you just try to reason it out in your own mind? Could you help me with that?
He handed it to me. Of course, there were a lot of things. There were some things I ran across where I didn't seem as though I was helping there. The difficult, deep-seated emotional issues such as child abuse or incest and other things that I had no professional training in, didn't feel competent in thinking that I could get the person back to equilibrium with their own selves. I'd like to talk to them about issues in those instances of whether they felt guilty themselves and why, and help them through what I consider to be, and I'm not saying they needed it, but if they felt like they needed to go through a repentance process. We talked about a variety of things like that. But I called upon social services the same way that I called on other counselors. I had my own private set of counselors that I had learned about through various sources, and when I saw a need, I suggested that they go talk to this person, until they found one that they were comfortable with. Who paid for that was another issue, but sometimes the people at church social services I had talked to, explained problems about, got some initial feedback. If they sounded good, I'd send them there. If not, then I wouldn't hesitate to send them to a private counselor as well. So there were clearly things that I didn't feel like I was personally trained for. I felt like I could talk to them about the religious aspects of their concern and their problem to make sure they were overcoming their depression or their sorrow or their grief through prayer, through scripture study, and primarily temple attendance if they weren't temple worthy, to get them temple worthy, to get them into the temple and do the things that I think are helpful for the soul. But when it came to some of the communications issues they had with people and things, I sent them to people more trained in that.
Could I just say ditto, or you won't let me get away with it? Yeah, we learned to use as many of the public help programs as possible, but as I served as a bishop, I felt very strange about making a decision on my own many times. Once again, I would fall down to my counselors and then down to the ward council after that to see if all the aspects of one person could be helped or at least supported by the ward, as they did receive professional counseling, if that's what they needed, or public assistance in some way. So it's a variety of things. If it was a spiritual issue, then I had to struggle with that and see if I could come up with a decent resolution to whatever the problem was. But the important thing that I found is that if you show the people that you're willing to take time with them, and quite frankly, a lot of the people who needed help I became very close friends with. I mean, you can't help but do that. And for them to know that there were things that had to be done, but there was also no fear of any kind of drastic action against them for you know, whatever reason, people were willing to be more truthful with me when I showed them that I was just seeking truth and not seeking any kind of action if that sort of thing was called for.
Well, I certainly never hesitated to use the professional services of the church and other services that where there was competence that I didn't have, and certainly in areas of emotional problems and depression and that sort of thing, I use that a lot. I think that the most difficult things for me in this last 9 years as being bishop of a singles ward is trying to help people come to terms with things that are really insoluble, particularly people who felt that they had been, that been dealt a bad deal in life, and it's particularly true with good women who had gone through the church programs, grown up, committed themselves, and expected by the time they were 21 or 22 they'd be married. When that didn't happen, they went on a mission, came back, they're working, they're good people, they're wonderful women, and that nobody's marrying them. They don't have any chance to get married. And they're saying, you know, why didn't somebody tell me about it? Why hasn't it worked for me? What did I do wrong? And I've never felt there's an answer to that. I cry with them, and I commiserate with them, and I tell them if poor marriage were back, or if I were younger, I'd marry them. But beyond that, there's not a lot I could do for them. Those kind of things, I guess, were the hardest ones. And it was, how do you reach for words and get inspiration in order to say something that's going to be helpful to them? And I think probably just the fact that you're struggling and with is probably the best response you can have. But there's really not a good answer to a lot of that.
It was always my impression. I had a grandfather that was bishop for 25 years, and I'm always grateful that the church abandoned that policy. But in reading the diaries of and talking to my father about what it was like to be the son of a bishop, he said that there were always problems with economics, crop failures, a rural community of Kanash where he was the bishop. Some marital misunderstandings. But it seems to me, brethren, that it's changed so dramatically. I mean, we're talking about child abuse. We're talking about rising incident of divorce. I mean, a 50% average now nationally. We're talking about changing sexual mores for our young people who are experimenting with sex at a very young age and experimenting with drugs. And in some cases, carrying pistols to school. Do you think that the church ought to have some kind of a orientation for us, or get some of the leading authorities on these subjects and help us? Because in talking about the problems that are brought to us, focusing specifically on some of those things I have mentioned, it always posed an enormous problem. Do you have any suggestions that you feel would have made you a better bishop in terms of your role as counseling these people, if that could have somehow assisted you? Because these problems are so unique to our times. Dave?
It comes to me first again. The thought I have on that, although the outward manifestations are different, for example, when I was in high school, drug usage was prevalent, but it wasn't the same kind of drugs today. When I was in high school, it was during the LSD period, which is back again to some extent, but we did not have cocaine and heroin that is prevalent among high school and college students today. And I use that as an example to say that although the manifestations of the problems are different, I think we still have the same problem, root of the same problems. Fortunately for me, I guess I was experiencing with my own children some of those problems. And I think today the thing that we help people do is to decide how best to deal with that. When I was at that age, people tended to cover those problems up. Nowadays they have rehabilitation centers, treatment programs, and things like that, that I think we're just told to be aware of. You ask whether we wish we would have had more training. Frankly, I wish they would have just come to us and said, you're really on your own, rather than, because I would pour through the manuals and the handbooks and the guidelines and the bulletins and things and didn't find those answers. And it would have been a little bit better if somebody came and said, you won't find answers to most of these things. You have to deal with them. I personally believe in the, I think it's 46th section of the Doctrine and Covenants, talking about the gifts of the Spirit. One of the gifts is administration. There are different bishops who will respond to different people's needs. And it's a good thing that they change that way so that people who didn't relate to one bishop during one phase will be able to relate to a different bishop, a different administration, a different way of handling a problem. As far as the training, the only thing that I... The most sensitive thing for me is I knew there were people who probably could help me resolve a problem that somebody else in the ward was having. I was always hesitant to go to that person and ask about the situation for fear that they would understand who I was talking about. Mm-hmm. So I felt limited in being able within the ward area, in large part because I was afraid that the problem that I wanted to discuss with another ward member who had the resources to help might figure out who it was and then tell someone who they didn't want to know. And as was mentioned, it's just incredibly important to maintain the confidentiality so that people will speak openly with you about their problems. Then where you take it from there is difficult because you're trying to find them a solution that you may not be trained in or have the experience for and still keep who they are and what the problem is confidential.
Thank you.
We're going to change this a little bit.
Threw it at me. A year ago here at Stinson, Kim McCall gave a paper in which he said five reasons why we ought to do away with the bishop's interview. And I responded to that paper, and his basic argument was that bishops didn't do a very good job at interviewing, and it was and he had a lot of examples of overstepping bounds and offending people and even up to the point almost of abuse. But in fairness, in his paper, he also had some things that were good about it. But one of the points that came out of that session was that it would certainly be helpful if bishops had a little bit of insight and help as they got started in interviewing, because that's one thing all bishops are going to do is interview, and do a lot of interviewing, and if they had now obviously some people come to being a bishop with having had some experience of that, if they're professionally involved in counseling with people and helping career development or help me in teaching or something like that, they may do quite a bit of it. But a lot of bishops have very little experience with it, and I think that that would be a big help if bishops were given some idea about how to talk to, what the purpose of the interview is, how you talk with people of different ages, of different genders, language you might use, if there's resistance on the part of someone to talk to you about something, how you deal with that, and go on from there. I think a couple of hours with someone who has had experience in interviewing and had some general points about doing it right, I think would be very helpful. And in the church, we generally aren't very big on sensitivity training and things like that, and that's to some extent I'm asking for that. And I don't know, but it would. Surely we can find someone with a church orientation who recognizes the importance of being sensitive in interviews and trying to work with the people that are there and blessing them with an interview rather than threatening them and cursing them.
Well, it's I agree that there could be some training done. I often wonder, the stake has a certain way of running. And I'm wondering, if we do something like this on a stake level where there's lots of special training and stuff, we're going to give up some other part of it, and that could be good or that could be bad. But I often thought, gee, it would be great to know how to handle this situation. It would be great to have some expertise in this. But on the other hand, when it comes right down to the basic decision that you have to make, it's pretty much between you and God. And